time for Vanessa and Gallant.
That sounds good. I'll have that.
Featuring Vanessa Richardson.
This is not a common opinion. This is not a popular opinion.
And Paul Gallant.
Tom Brady is my Lord and Savior.
On ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Vanessa Richardson and Paul Gallant.
Second and nine, Stafford, look out from behind. Von Miller got him again. Sack number two for Von in a return to L.A.
Yeah, he was good last night. The Bills in general were very good last night. I'm Vanessa Richardson, Paul Gallant, Sean Mapes behind the glass. As always, the Bills beat the Rams 31-10, and honestly, it seemed more like a complete blowout than anything, and it did so even when they were tied at halftime. Fun week one, though.
Vanessa, they could have won that game by 50 points. They dropped and fumbled the ball enough to keep the Rams in it at halftime, but we're on the same page. I'm still having a hard time fully buying into the Buffalo Bills like everyone else has, especially the national pundits, but that was a damn good performance by them last night. This is now, Vanessa, of their last six games, the fourth that they have not even punted. Four out of six. I doubt that's ever been done in NFL history, especially given how conservative teams can be. They looked really good on offense. Their pass rush was all over the Rams, and yeah, very impressive showing last night.
One of my all-time favorite players who is at least still in the league is Von Miller, and I know there were questions. Okay, he's older. This is his third team. Von Miller was in rare form last night. He looked fantastic. He was quick. He did everything that he needed to do. And here's Von Miller on his quarterback, Josh Allen, and how he felt about him.
He's a creature. There he is right there, right? He's a creature, man. He's good, man. He's the leader of our team. You know, we kind of follow his lead, man. You know, he's a tough guy. And out there running guys over, stiff-arming guys, man. Had a lot of success tonight, and we just kind of fed off each other, man. And those are the games that you want to play in. And one thing that we preach to each other, you know, is a championship fight coming in here. They're going to make plays. They got Matthew Stafford, Cooper Kupp, Aaron Donald, Jalen Ramsey. They're going to make plays, but we got to make our plays as well. You know, it was a heavyweight championship fight. They hit us. We hit them. We was able to, you know, come out on top with a score to a hit.
I liked that soundbite because he says we fed off of each other, and that's what it felt like. It felt like a complete team win.
He was so energetic, and he's found the fountain of youth since moving on from Denver. When he was in Denver last year, people were like, is he still the same guy that he was? And then, I mean, if you take a look at what he did in the Super Bowl where he had two sacks, the entire second half of that year with the Rams, it was like all of a sudden he's a kid again. And you heard it after the game. I mean, he even said, man, it was great to see all my brothers. You play with the Rams for 3 months, dude.
But when you win a Super Bowl, true. I feel like that's there true. Is the automatic brotherhood element of that, too.
No doubt. I like hearing his enthusiasm.
I love Von Miller. I didn't like his hair. We do need to talk about why was there a triangle, and if I'm being insensitive because there's something that I don't know where there's a band of brother with triangles, I don't understand.
It seemed cultish. I saw online that it might be a Dallas thing.
Oh.
But I honestly have no reference point on that, and I'm hoping that it's a cult thing.
Yeah, he is like a chicken farm in Texas. Von Miller's a different dude.
Is it for the chicken farmers of America? Is he in could solidarity be. With their union? I don't could know. Be.
It actually is. It's a PETA thing saying, look up. It's to kind of raise awareness for no, I'm just kidding.
Oh, God.
It's something so stupid.
Because I was about to not like Von Miller. But he looked great last night. Josh Allen was doing his thing. He had a couple of first-half interceptions, but they were able to clean those up.
And it wasn't his fault
yeah,
on either
they weren't,
of them.
It wasn't like out of sloppiness on his part.
I think that on the first one, I mean, duh, the receiver dropped it. The second one, I think you could make a case that it was Allen's fault, but also you could say that the wide receiver kind of slowed up for a second and Allen maybe put it in the wrong spot because of that. Whatever the case, I mean, Allen has looked absolutely incredible in the last couple of games that we have seen him play. And if you bet on him to be MVP this year, you're probably feeling pretty good about yourself. I mean, that stiff arm he delivered to that poor defensive back, he just smashed him in the face and shoved him down to the ground. He was getting in other players' faces, including that of Jalen Ramsey. You got to feel pretty good if you're a Bills fan right now. Again, there's 16 games left this season, but in an offseason of overreaction where a lot of people were feeling the Bills made good on it, and they deserve credit for that.
26 of 33, 297 yards, and three touchdowns. for Josh Allen. What did you guys see from him that you liked on a much more broad level? We knew that he was going to be good, but the last game we saw him was the coin toss game.
Yeah.
The infamous, which to think that that's the last time we've seen him play football is unreal.
He hasn't skipped a beat. I mean, he completed his first 10 passes. The 11th pass got picked off because it was dropped. He's running all over the place. He almost had what would have been, I think, the coolest play of the game when he faked a scramble and then at the last second pulled up and lasered it to Stephon Diggs. He just threw it a little bit too hard. But he is such a dual threat. You saw also, too, at the goal line, he's running over Bobby Wagner, a six-time All-Pro. I would put an asterisk next to that. But he just ran over him into the end zone for a touchdown. He looks unstoppable. And I don't know what the answer is for someone like Josh Allen, who is as mobile as he is, as difficult to tackle as he is, and who has become as accurate as he has. Because that's the most amazing part about Josh Allen. First couple of years in the league, you're like, what? Watching him in college, you're probably thinking to yourself, what? And here he is, looking like the best quarterback in the game.
Let's move to the men that hosted this game and had their banner unveiled before the ceremony. Matt Stafford sacked 7 times, the most he has been sacked as a Ram.
That offensive line lost Andrew Whitworth, and they also lost a guard, Austin Corbett, this offseason. And you also look at Stafford along the way. I mean, I'll give him credit for hanging in there. He's still a tough you-know-what. But whatever's going on with that elbow, the delivery didn't look good. There were a couple of balls that he just completely missed. And if he's going to have that kind of protection in front of him and no help from a running game featuring Cam Akers, who I've never really understood the Rams' appeal for him, and he barely even got in that game, or, you know, Allen Robinson, who doesn't even get involved. I mean, Cooper Kupp and Matt Stafford, when he wasn't getting killed, that was the entire Rams team last night. I mean, because the defense didn't show up at all.
Should the Rams have played some of their starters in the preseason?
Maybe.
Was this rust? I mean, we know what it was. Matthew Stafford may still have some issues with his elbow. But should they have played some of their starters? Because the Bills sure as heck did.
I think offensively you could argue that. I think defensively, like, this is them being exposed. Aaron Donald is a great player still, but now Von Miller's in Buffalo. And think about this. I've said this a million times. I've never been as into the most recent version of Bobby Wagner that other people are. Because I've watched the guy firsthand in Seattle. And if you watch him, and I was actually texting, you know, back and forth with somebody who knows a thing or two about that position. And he's showing me all these plays where Bobby Wagner's not taking blockers head on. He's undercutting blocks. And he's just not as fast as he used to be. You saw that in a couple of plays in the flats where he's trying to cover running backs. He couldn't do that. And then defensive back, Jalen Ramsey, I don't know what's going on with him, Vanessa, but if you go back to last year's playoffs, and I touched on this a little bit yesterday, game against the Bucs, he gives up big plays. The Super Bowl, he gives up big plays. This game, he was giving up big plays. He just looked lost. He gave up, in passes thrown against him, a perfect passer rating. And we're talking about this guy is one of the best corners in the league, a guy who was number 9 on the NFL players ranking. I don't know where he ranks among corners right now.
Also a guy that does a lot of talking. And if you do that much talking, that's always my rule. If you do that much talking, I don't care what sport it is. You can talk about baseball, football, but you have to produce.
100%. And I mean, go back to that article that he did with Mina Kimes where he had the following to say about one, Josh Allen, and I can understand it at the time. I had some doubts about Josh Allen at first, but, I mean, geez, you got to fall on the sword for this one. He said this, I think Allen is trash. I don't care what nobody says. He's trash, and he's going to show too. That's a stupid draft pick to me. We play them this year, and I'm excited as hell. I hope he's their starting quarterback. He went on this rant about how he played at small schools and always sucked against big schools. And then you take a look at the numbers that Josh Allen has had whenever he has played against Jalen Ramsey. And, I mean, he's put Ramsey in a body bag. 3-0, 11 touchdowns, 70% completion percentage, 9.3 yards per attempt, 3 rushing touchdowns as well along the way. I mean, he's owned Jalen Ramsey wherever he's played him.
Yeah, I also have a very controversial opinion from last night that I would like to touch on.
Go ahead.
Why was there a moment of silence for the Queen?
I'm glad you brought it up.
I don't really follow the royal family. I've never been into the royal family. I think if Princess Diana were still around, I probably would be. She seems kind of cool. Like all, you know, moms love Princess Diana. I mean, if when Jimmy Carter dies, are they going to have a bunch of moment of silences in their cricket games? Like, I just don't see it happening.
There's a lot of, I think, layers to unpack here. Did you see that Congress is going to have a day of bereavement?
Okay.
To
wait, our Congress?
Yes,
in
our Congress. Yes.
Why?
Well, because you got to remember, you know, the person whose job that they took. So you can take another day off. You only work 170 days a year. You know, what's one more day?
Yeah.
Huh? You know, let's honor the queen. Yeah, I'm with you. I hated that. I like that the PA announcer interrupted it. Like, no, a moment of silence. Put your hands together for the Compton Little League football team.
I don't know. Weird behavior to me. What's not weird is BUSR, by the way, so tell your friends about it. Football season is here. You just watched the first NFL game last night. BUSR.com/ESPN. You can double your deposit within the first 24 hours. Maybe you have a futures bet that you know will cash in. The Texans over-under is set at 4.5 right now. Do you think they're going to win more? Maybe you're a hater. You think they're going to win less. By the way, you can still get the Astros at +400. Go to BUSR.com/ESPN and place those bets. Maybe you're more of a roulette girl. Maybe you're more of a blackjack guy. All great. The good news, you can do it all at BUSR.com/ESPN.
ESPN. 97.5. You're listening to Vanessa and Gallant on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Vanessa Richardson and Paul Gallant.
All right, week one, here we go. Sunday, the Indianapolis Colts are in town to take on your Houston Texans, as Clay Walker says. It's football time in Houston, baby. I'm looking forward to it. The Colts dropping the last 8 season openers, which is a very interesting stat. Who knows if they're going to be able to break that stat this week against Houston. But I'm looking forward to it. It'll be nice to have NFL back here in Houston. And we've talked the offseason, guys, about some of the improvements that have been made in the franchise. Not only on the field, there's been some nice off-the-field awareness, I think, as well.
I agree, but I don't think that they're going to truly win people back unless they actually do something shocking.
Like win on the field, you mean?
You got to win week one, and I feel like the only way you're going to start to pull people back who I think rightfully so have become pissed off at the franchise is if you put together a really convincing effort. You know, all the things that they're doing off the field, I do think that it deserves some commendation, but I mean, at the other end of things, they have done such a poor job of, I think, community outreach over the 20 years that they have been here, outside of, you know, doing all the things that are great, where, you know, going to Uvalde and things like that, and other situations too in the past. Like, they've been here for the community, but have they felt like a part of the community? Have they felt like a part of Houston? They never really have. They've always been this sort of separate entity to themselves, where they seem to be a reflection of, like, what the ownership likes. And again, okay, that's their right. That's their organization. But they got to win, and they got to win convincingly. So I'm curious what the parking lot's going to be like before this game. I doubt there will be that much buzz. I just hope that there are people actually there, because I know that last year in particular, it was
bad.
Like a funeral.
And this, by the way, like, the Texans historically have had really good tailgates and have sold out tickets, like season ticket holders every season. So it was very strange. But they've done a lot. The McNairs, we've talked about it. Cal McNair and Hannah McNair have been at a lot of the practices and training camp. Cal McNair did the thing where he grilled hamburgers for Texans fans. So they are making an effort. But we'll see what the on-the-field result looks like.
Grilled them steak and cake.
Yeah. One of the biggest question marks on the Colts side of the ball, but it will definitely affect the Texans, if linebacker Shaq, the artist formerly known as Darius Leonard, will be playing. Here's Shaq Leonard this week.
Would you be open to a pitch count, or when you back, you want to be 100%?
If I'm up, I'm up. You know, I don't do – well, I'm not going to say I don't do, because I mean, I do whatever they want me to do. But, you know, if I'm playing, you know, I want every rep. You know, that's just the mentality that I'm supposed to have. You know, I'm not a guy who likes to stand on the sideline, you know, watch other guys play. So, you know, if I'm out there, I'm out there.
If he's out there, I think the Texans should run right at him. I think that that's – the most interesting part of this game is, okay, this is a linebacker's top 5 in the game. And if he's not 100% and he's out on that field and you think he's not 100%, you go at him early and see what happens, see how he handles it. Because there might be a point where all of a sudden the Colts say to themselves, if he's out there, shoot, man, 80% of Shaquille Leonard isn't enough. And, I mean, Damian Pierce is the biggest key to this season. It's about what this team's going to be able to do running the football, especially with how much Lovie Smith likes to run the football.
Per Zach Kiefer of The Athletic, who does a great job for Indianapolis, after practicing in full yesterday, Colts linebacker Shaq Leonard was limited today. He tweeted that yesterday. So he was limited in practice yesterday.
Okay, so we're still not 100% sure. It sounds like it's going to be a game time decision, or maybe we'll find out today when they release some of the Friday version of the injury report.
Yeah, we'll see what happens there. That's a big question. What's not under question is that Davis Mills will be under center for the Houston Texans. Although it's his second year in the league, it's his first, what we think will be a full season starting. Here's Davis Mills on the matchup with the Colts.
It's awesome. I mean, different than last year where I didn't know really what was going to happen at this point last year, but coming in, having a whole offseason to prepare, whole camp, even the practices leading up to this week, it's a great feeling, and I mean, I'm excited to go out there and attack it this weekend.
So he feels like there is a difference between last year and this year. He feels like he's made strides. I think those of us that were at training camp would agree. There were moments. There were definitely moments. You've talked about the concern throwing the ball down the field, but Davis Mills hopefully looking better than last year.
I'm very curious as to how much they're going to let him do, because he's had a full off season, of course, but it's the preseason, so you don't want to overreact too much to it, but through training camp in the preseason, as you just said a second ago, the thing I noticed is that they were not really going downfield at all, and you don't have to do that to win in this league necessarily, but when you got a quarterback like Davis Mills, who is not running that much, and when you, for the most part, at wide receiver, have just one guy that seems like he has the capability of making people miss in the open field in Brandon Cooks, you need to find ways to throw the football 9, 10, 11 yards downfield. It felt like very often Mills was taking the easiest thing available. And while that can be good for a team that's got a great defense, for a team that wants to determine whether or not that guy's the franchise quarterback, like, you need way more than that to feel, hey, yeah, we're not going to draft the quarterback in next year's draft.
You had a fun fact about Matt Ryan that you brought up.
Yeah, I saw this on Pro Football Talk. So I guess Matt Ryan's going to throw for over 60,000 yards officially on Sunday. And don't you hate the passing yard stat? I don't know why I am so triggered by it the way that I am, but I remembered, I think it was during a Monday night football game where they actually paused the game when Drew Brees passed the all-time
passing yards
record.
That's right.
And they brought his whole family on the field. And I'm like, we're talking about yards. Like, dude, passing yards are going to continue to go up and up and up. And I think Tom Brady passed him, and they were going back and forth passing each other. And Patrick Mahomes is going to pass Tom Brady. And there's a quarterback probably that's going to play 10 years from now that's going to pass Patrick Mahomes. But the yard statistic just keeps on going up and up and up as defenders are allowed to do less and less and less. So that will be something that takes place on Sunday, because Matt Ryan has had a pretty damn good career.
Yeah, he is. He was good in Atlanta. Okay. Realistic expectations, gentlemen. What are your realistic expectations for the Texans this week against the Colts? Sean Mapes, we'll start with you.
How about don't lose 31-0 or 31-3?
Oh, nice.
Score a touchdown.
Really asking for a loss.
Score a touchdown.
There you go.
And keep it within 4 touchdowns. So,
really? The bar is that low?
No, it's not that low. I mean, as far as realistic, yeah, just, I don't know, probably like a 10. If they lose by 10, I won't be like, oh my God, this team is worse than we thought. I think a 10-point loss, I know the line's probably like 3 or something or 4. But like, if we're being real, 7. Like if you tell me that they lose by 10, I'm not disappointed.
Okay, Paul.
I mean, can you be in this game at the very end? Is your defense going to show a backbone against a quarterback that you would think is going to be at least better than the guy that they were going up against in Indianapolis last year, if not better than that? I feel like keeping this thing close the whole way through is the realistic expectation. I'm not expecting a win. I don't think anyone should be expecting a win, no matter how much we might feel this team has turned a page this offseason.
Have a chance in the fourth quarter. That's mine.
Yeah. So
going into the fourth quarter, be within a touchdown or a touchdown and a field goal, whatever. Have a chance in the fourth quarter. Let's turn to much more of a broad outlook for the season. Who is the Texans player, not named Davis Mills and not named Damian Pierce, who you would like to see have a breakout season? For me, it's Jalen Petrie all the way. I would love to see what he can do adding a safety. He was obviously taken 37th in the 2022 draft by Nick Caserio and the squad. I'm excited to see what Jalen can do and how effective he can be This is a Texans team that obviously has struggled on defense. They've been historically one of the worst defenses year after year after year. Now that he is a defensive-minded head coach and that entire Lovie Smith regime, I'd like to see Jalen Petrie have a breakout year.
He's got a chance to. They're going to put him on the field a lot, and he's going to be right in the middle of the action at all times. And I feel that because of that, he's probably going to be your most important defender this coming season as far as determining whether or not you actually have any playmakers. I think Derek Stingley Jr., best case scenario, that's a guy who's going to be off to the side, and you're not going to be throwing the ball his way. But Jalen Petrie, just because of where he's going to be lining up, which I'm assuming is going to be in the box a lot or around the box a lot, he's going to be around the ball a lot. And is he going to be able to force fumbles? I think the best part about him from training camp and in the preseason has been that he's always found his way around the football when the play ends. I just like guys who are consistently in the play. That could potentially lead to injury or something like that, but Petrie seems to have the confidence of the Texans. So I think that's definitely possible for Nessa. For me, the guy that I really want to see do that is Kenyon Green, because I think if you're looking for an offensive line that can actually pave the way for Damian Pierce, Damian Pierce is the obvious choice. We're all hoping that like he comes through, but Damian Pierce has a great season if Kenyon Green ends up being this absolute mauler on the interior.
Is there a breakout player for you, Sean Mapes, that you'd like to see?
Yeah, Nico Collins, if he could really step up and be like a very good option for Davis Mills besides Brandon Cooks, because really if you look at this team right now, it's like Brandon Cooks, as far as pass catchers go, it's Brandon Cooks and a whole bunch of like, hope it works out for him. And I think Nico Collins really showed the most last year, most kind of flash last year. And so if you can feel good about Nico Collins at the end of the season, and we all think that we're going to feel good about Damian Pierce, then you're working with something long term as opposed to depending on Brandon Cooks, who's on his like a millionth team in his career.
He's big, Nico.
Yeah.
And I think if you're looking for someone to help in the red zone, there were some hints in the preseason where they're throwing the fades in the left side of the end zone to him in against San Francisco. Like, they clearly look at him and they're like, he's a tight end that we can line out way to the side of the field and isolate him one-on-one. I hate fades with a passion, by the way, but that's someone that they definitely are looking at as a red zone threat.
But if you have a couple of breakout players, if one of these guys shows potential, we don't expect every guy drafted to be, you know, to wear a gold jacket. But if you could have a couple of breakout players, isn't that the most hope Texans fans would have in a long time?
Yeah. Does anyone have any?
That's sad, but think about it.
Yeah.
We've talked about who are they going to put on the tickets.
Kyemi Fairbairn. Yeah. As one Twitcher points out, you're going to need him to step up his game. Look, I think it's probably going to be one of those seasons where we're going to feel great right now, and a couple of games in, we might be right back where we were last year. I want to feel all this optimism that the team is trying to pull back.
I'm feeling it, baby. Glass half full.
Yeah, I think the most important thing is like if the young guys flash in games and like are the best players on this team, that to me is like already good, because it at least shows for the longest time they had no young talent. Mm-hmm. They just did not have young talent.
Their roster was like a 2014 fantasy football.
They traded every pick they had. And so, yes, there's a lot of, Mark Ingram. I remember watching him when I was in middle school. Yeah, I love that guy.
David Johnson, Rex Burkhead.
Yeah. And so just to have young talent, I think, is already just such a step up. And if you win five games and your best players are all 25 years old, that is at least a start of something.
All right, coming up on Vanessa and Gallant, we have some breaking news in the NFL, and it is directly related to Deshaun Watson and his deal. That's coming up.
ESPN. 97.5.
We're ready for some football, baby.
Tackling the biggest news in the NFL.
This just in.
With Vanessa and Gallant. The 10-minute drill starts now.
Football time.
It is football time, and we start with some breaking news per Adam Schefter. Lamar Jackson has turned down the Ravens' offer. He is betting on himself. He'll make $23 million this season, and he's expected, of course, to be franchise tagged after the season. Lamar Jackson and his agent, a.k.a. his mama, betting on Lamar.
I think ultimately this works for Baltimore. Now, I know that there's a possibility that Jackson has an incredible year, and that they have to give him a big contract. Say he does what Joe Flacco did about a decade ago. God, time has flown. But
Paul just had an I'm old moment, by the way.
Yes, I did.
You can see the look on his face. It was
anyway,
very disturbing.
Don't need to rub it in.
Joe Flacco moment was 2012.
Seriously.
I was getting my driver's license as he was tearing up the Broncos defense.
I was 23 doing weekend radio at the flagship station. Anyway, with Lamar Jackson, he's always going to be a guy who is potentially injured. And with as much of his game being reliant on his legs, even if he has been to this point good at avoiding all of the hits, unlike guys like Robert Griffin III and some other players who maybe go headfirst into contact, all it takes is one to potentially change all of that, whether it just makes him slower or it changes his mentality when it comes to moving. And it's not to say he can't throw the ball, but I understand Baltimore taking the hardline approach. And if I'm them, I don't hate paying Lamar Jackson the franchise tag for the next couple of seasons until he proves to me that he's someone that down the road can be a pocket passer.
I think that Deshaun Watson's deal made him a little bit more bold, looking at all that guaranteed money. And that was one of the main narratives after Watson's contract, was that Steve Bisciotti, owner of the Baltimore Ravens, was cussing out the Haslams. Because Lamar is going to see that and say, hey, I've been an MVP. Like, I've had those results. But we'll see. It's definitely Lamar Jackson, Joe Burrow, and Justin Herbert, by the way, are the quarterbacks that are in line for that new deal next season. It'll be an interesting offseason, as it always is for quarterbacks. All right, Russell Wilson. We talk about him a lot on this show. Paul covered him in Seattle. Mm-hmm. He's obviously with the Broncos now after spending many, many years with the Seahawks. And Russell Wilson was meeting with the media and talked a little bit about his treatment that he received from the Seahawks.
I definitely think they tried to, you know, a couple times and try to see what was out there. It's part of the business and it's part of being a professional and everything else. And upset is probably the wrong word. I don't think that, you know, I believe in my talent, who I am. You know, I believe I'm one of the best in the world. I don't worry about anything else other than that. I think that, you know, I think at the same time too, you know, I think my focus has always been on winning and what we can do and how we can add great players and everything else. And so, you know, I've got to play with some amazing guys, some of the world's best, and Dwayne Brown, you know, guys like Chris Carson, you know, unfortunately can't play anymore, but just a guy like that. DK Metcalf, Tyler Lockett, Bobby Wagner, you know, Jamal Adams, and Quandre Diggs, you know. So my focus is always on winning. That's really all that matters.
So if upset isn't the right word, what is the right word?
I didn't really pay attention to it, to be honest with you. It's as far as professional sports, you know.
The O'Brien maneuver, right? Just
where
naming everybody.
I literally thought that while he was doing it, and you can probably see it in my eyes. It's like after you cover Bill O'Brien, every time somebody defers and deflects a question by just listing things, I'm always going to think of one William O'Brien. But what did you think about that? That was obviously Russ talking about the Seahawks trying to trade him.
Whenever he talks, you just tend to zone out because it just turns into that at the end. But what's noteworthy is at the very beginning, he said a few teams tried that. I'm not sure I buy that. I do know that they definitely talked with the Cleveland Browns about trading for that number one overall pick. And I think that they would have taken Josh Allen with that number one overall pick, because John Schneider, the general manager of the Seahawks, went to Josh Allen's pro day, which drove Russell Wilson crazy. But I think that any trade talks that continued after that were because of Russell Wilson perhaps being obstinate when it came to that next contract that he wanted before he had played out the most recent contract he'd signed. He had a rough second half of the year. So you can understand it. There are two sides to every single story. There are definitely things the Seahawks could have done better. I'm not going to deny that. But if you're asking me to take a side in this little back and forth, I'm taking the side of the team that kept its mouth shut and didn't air the dirty laundry, as opposed to Russ, who continues to throw more and more and more pieces
and does
of dirty
it in a way
in
that he wants to still be the nice guy, which is obnoxious. Pete Carroll is known to be a pretty nice guy, so he was asked how he thinks the 12th man will receive Russell Wilson when he comes back.
Hey, you're either competing or you're not. I'm leaving up to the 12th. And, you know, it's game time, and we're going for it. And so however they take it, I'll follow their lead on that. I mean, I'm not going to be involved with that kind of opportunity to react, you know, so I don't have to make that decision. I will see what happens, but I'm leaving up to the 12s. I think they'll know exactly what to do.
They're going to boo him. That's classic. He could have
done that. He could have done the, hey, we'll keep it classy. He won a Super Bowl here. Love Russ. Always a member of family. He didn't say that.
Hey, we're just always competing. You know, always competing at the start of the regular season.
He's got a David Culley vibe to him.
But like, imagine like David Culley just had a lot of coffee. And you know, well, I can't wait to get back out in front of the 12s with the rest of the squad. I liked Pete Carroll while I was there. We got to interview him every single Monday. But very often you could tell when he was, full of it. I think he would definitely, if he were in the crowd, be booing Russell Wilson. 100%. Even though he's one of the most positive people I think I've ever met. It's kind of, at times...
It's a little much.
It's a little much.
I did
like Pete Carroll a lot.
Okay, Devontae Adams and Derek Carr definitely like each other. They're back together in Las Vegas playing for the Raiders after being BFFs in the offseason, and they played together Fresno State. We have now heard this, it seems like, just as much as we've heard about Stafford and Kershaw. But what if neither one of them were playing because they were, dun-dun-dun, dead? Here's them talking about a story.
It is a long story, but long story short is I remember us getting flung out that boat, and I'm fully submerged underwater, and I feel Devontae grab my foot. And so I remember, like, pulling him up, like, and trying to get him in the boat. But, yeah, I mean, it was scary. I'm not going to lie. It was scary. But yeah, when you go through something like that together, you get a tighter bond, I guess.
Whitewater rafting apparently turned very dangerous. When you listen to the story, you're like, oh, they almost drowned. It wasn't like a funny, like, oh, we fell. No, they almost drowned.
That's pretty terrifying. Would you ever go whitewater rafting?
Good question.
I'm not a very outdoorsy person.
I actually am. I really enjoy tubing with beer.
Tubing with beer, very different from whitewater rafting.
Whitewater rafting, I love tubing. Would be, I think, a little bit iffy. To me, it's a little too much effort. You know, it's too much effort to be fun. You know those pickle pedal bar things that people do in cities like in Nashville and whatnot where they ride the thing while they have a lot of bachelorette parties do it.
Paul's seen them.
Yes.
Yeah. Too much effort to be fun for me. I don't want to, like, I'm not going to drink beer and listen to country music and, like.
You want to drink beer and whitewater raft?
No. I don't want to do
Derek
anything.
With Derek Carr and Devontae Adams drinking while whitewater rafting.
It's too much effort to be fun.
I will say at least it's like an adventure kind of thing. Like, it at least gets, like, the adrenaline pumping as opposed to, like you said, pedaling through Nashville. It's like, There's nothing more there to it. You're just sitting, drinking, and moving your legs.
It would definitely get the adrenaline pumping, but I'd much, much rather go skiing on like a black diamond or a double black diamond than I would whitewater rafting. Anything that involves water where it's not in my control, and then there's rocks too. Yeah, like out.
Well, you always hear about people drowning, and these are like people that know how to swim drown because the tide pulls them.
Yeah.
So it is very scary.
Yeah, I would still do it. I would do it.
All right, Deshaun.
All it takes is your head hitting one rock and boom, concussed.
Same thing with skiing. Like you have to do, like, you could.
Yeah, true. Ask the Kennedy.
Trey Lance is not a captain. Here's Trey Lance on not being named one of the captains of the San Francisco 49ers.
Obviously, that's a goal of mine, but and then I don't think you can look at any six of those guys and be like, hey, that guy's a bozo, because those guys have all played football at a very, very high level. Situations are different. I'm excited. I voted for every single one of those guys. So I think each and every one of them deserves it. It's definitely a goal of mine moving forward. But those guys have all proved it. And that's what this league is all about.
So they voted for captains. Lance came in seventh.
Yeah.
Debo Samuel came in eighth. For what it's worth, that's also interesting that he came in eighth despite being one of the best players in the team. Maybe that had to do with the way that he acted this offseason. There are still doubts, I bet, in that locker room about whether or not this guy, Trey Lance, can lead them.
Oh, this proves it.
Right.
This 100% proves it.
If they were all in with Trey Lance, they all would have voted for him. I wonder how many people went up to perhaps Kyle Shanahan, John Lynch, and said, look, we need Garoppolo on this team. We've played with him before. No one's been more effusive in their praise of Jimmy Garoppolo than George Kittle, the tight end of the 49ers. You would think, with that in mind, that they probably listened and said to themselves, we need to have a fallback plan because if we go all in with Trey Lance and this blows up, this could blow up for us, specifically Kyle Shanahan.
Here's Kyle Shanahan, by the way, on Trey Lance not being named one of the six captains.
I mean, if you're going to look into it that much, he was seventh in the voting. I just don't want to put seven on there. You know, Debo was eight. That's why I mentioned his name on accident. We just didn't wanted to go with six. They don't allow eight to the coin toss, I don't believe. So it's also his first year of starting for us. You know, I think guys do, you know, there's not many rookies who end up being the captains. I know this is his second year, but he's a rookie for us in terms of his first time being our starting quarterback.
I mean, he can joke about it all he wants. To me, it says that the team hasn't bought in.
Yeah, I feel that way. And I think also, you know, hearing Shanahan in that spot talking about like the amount of captains they could have had, I can't help but think about, I think it was the New York Giants a couple of years ago, maybe it's another team, where they had 10 captains going out to midfield.
It's just unnecessary.
Or just something absolutely preposterous. And sort of what like the Jets used to do, where the Jets would, or maybe it was Rex Ryan teams, where they would put like players that had played against the team before or played for the team in the past. Those guys would be named captains for a week.
Jeff Fisher did the thing where he got all the people that they picked in the RG3 trade, all the draft picks they got, all the guys they picked, they had them be the captains.
Yes.
I think it's pretty dumb. I also, the fact that there's six, that if you have asked me like how many team captains do you think go out for the coin toss, I've been like two, three, maybe four, like... The fact 15. That there's six is like, so there's 12 people standing in the middle of the field before every game?
I'd want to send my biggest people out.
Send a message?
Yeah.
Davis Mills is a captain, right?
Yes.
Yeah, okay, so
the
no
Davis
excuse,
Mills.
The Davis
yeah,
Mills.
So they, Captain I mean, Mills.
I am looking at the 49ers captains right now. It is a lot of, really, it's like Trent Williams, Fred Warner, Jimmy Ward. George Kittle, Nick Bosa, Eric Armstead.
Yeah, it's like Trey Lance said, they're not bozos, but haven't bought into Trey Lance.
I will say, I do get like every one of those guys. I'm like,
right.
Maybe Jimmy Ward.
You know?
Jimmy
coming Ward, up on Vanessa and Gallant, we're going to talk a little Astros. Plus, there's a very particular player that Paul is missing. That's coming up next.
You going to answer that?
To call into the HRNP listener line, dial 713-780-ESPN. The Affordable Care Act continues to be a complex regulation, and employers must comply. Visit HRP.net for help. Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's Vanessa and Gallant. On ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
All right, the Angels in town tonight. The Astros will host them. The Astros, of course, 88 and 49. The Angels, 60 and 77. It has not been a good year for the team that boasts Mike Trout and Shohei Ohtani. Couldn't be more different than the Astros. We talked about it at length, guys, in the leading weeks up to this. The month of September, very friendly schedule for the Astros. A little bit of athletics action, some Angels. Orioles, they're going to play the Orioles as well. So a good chance for the Astros to get another win tonight. Lance McCullers Jr. on the mound.
Yeah, I obviously am still wanting to fast forward to the playoffs. I love postseason baseball. Regular season baseball frustrates me. And I know in the Twitch chat, there's been a talk about a proposal that would maybe speed the games up. I would like that. And it's not because I dislike baseball as much as this. I just want to see the Astros in the postseason. I mean, it's a foregone conclusion.
You hate all preseason, to be fair.
Yes, but here's what's awesome about being an Astros fan is that the regular season is the preseason. It is your God-given right to start the first round of the playoffs in the American League Championship Series. I love that about this team. It is very reminiscent of a team I grew up rooting for, and it's why it's been so easy to jump on the bandwagon and be the biggest whore of a baseball fan
you are,
that anyone's
by the
ever
way,
seen.
Grew up a Red Sox fan, rooted for the Astros here, moved to Seattle, started an affair with the Mariners, and then moved back to the Astros.
The affair's not necessarily over, but you know, I am feeling very happy.
Yeah, see, it's not even over. What is wrong with you?
Call me a dog, and that's fair enough. A little Temple of the Dog action
there
for you.
Go.
This Angels team has obviously a couple of awesome bats in Mike Trout and Shohei Ohtani, but really what I'm looking at this series for is for the Astros bats to get going, and you know, you get closer and closer to the end of the dress rehearsal, which again is this regular season and this stretch, Vanessa, that you've outlined a couple of times being so easy. I hope that this is the series where we start to see this team scoring 5+ runs a game.
We're going to get to the player of which Paul misses the most in a second. Let's do a little Yankees watch.
Oh, yeah.
2022.
Yankees watch.
Damn Yankees!
2022.
Hey, Vanessa, I ever tell you about the time my father left me outside a bodega?
Forget about it.
told me he was going to go get a couple packs of cigarettes, and I never saw him again. Well, I have a new daddy. You know what his name is?
What's his name?
Bums me out. He's abusive. He beats me.
This is a good voice.
He hits me all the time. I'm talking about Carlos Correa.
Oh!
This guy Magul over here, coming out with the Minnesota Twins. He's kicking my ass. He's hitting eighth inning home runs. This guy, he's making web gems out there. He's hitting doubles. He hit another home run in a big spot. Well, I don't think much of the Twins, but goodness gracious, am I thankful this guy ain't on the Astros anymore. It sucks to have an abusive father, of course, but I'm just happy. I'm happy this series is
Sophia.
Done. Sophia, maybe I take it out on her now. I'm sorry about that, but you know, a man's got to do what a man's got to do. My father, Carlos Correa, get the hell out of town. You know, go Bronx Bombers.
There's your Yankees Watch 2022. They have definitely struggled the last month. It has been a one-man offense with Aaron Judge, of course, chasing Roger Maris' home run record. But you do miss Carlos Correa. You brought this up. Why is that?
Look, just seeing him do things against the Yankees. I know he didn't have a ton of hits in that series. I think he goes 5-for-17 overall in a four-game series. But he did have two home runs. He had the clutch home run last night. He had a double. Nice web gem on Wednesday. And it's a marathon, not a sprint, right? Obviously, if you're going to keep Carlos Correa around, you were going to have to pay him a lot of money. And you probably wouldn't have had certainty either, even if the Astros decided to match the offer that Minnesota gave Correa. There's no guarantee that he's going to be around next year, and you would potentially be standing in the way of a very cheap, affordable young player in Jeremy Peña who can get better and better. But for this team that is in win-now mode, that begins the playoffs in the American League Championship Series, I really would like to see Carlos Correa back on this team. And I did a little comparisons. It's not like it's a massive gap between the two, but Correa's been very steady for about a month and a half, with an OPS of 770 to 800 over that stretch. He has half the errors of Jeremy Peña. And Peña's leveled out after a rough July and August. He was so awesome in May and June, you figured that couldn't last all year. Seven-game hitting streak before the last game against Texas, so that feels good, too, to see. But there is a part of me that feels like we're going to miss Carlos Correa in the playoffs. And I know health's always a concern and that he would be a lot of money and in the way of Peña, and that what the Astros did was actually the correct move. I just know that watching him against the New York Yankees makes me miss him.
It's easier to root for Carlos Correa because he didn't go to the Yankees. He didn't go to the Dodgers. He didn't go to the Cardinals or any team that the Astros have a really strong history against. That makes it easier to root for him from afar. I don't care that he's with the Twins now. Seeing Carlos Correa succeed against the Yankees is always going to feel good.
Yep.
Always.
Yeah. I know we can't officially claim it, but as a cheap baseball whore,
Well, maybe I can.
Can I be a Twins fan too?
No, you can't
non-threatening.
You cannot have the fourth team that you've rooted for in your life.
At this point, you are what you are.
You're like my uncle that got married for the fourth time. Dude.
No, I think at this point, I'm just a guy who's going through his midlife crisis.
Yeah, that's what my uncle is. I'm not going to say his name. Shout out to my uncle, who I love.
Let him have his midlife crisis.
Marriages is a lot. All right, we're going to get John.
He's family.
John is calling into Vanessa and Gallant. John.
What's up, John?
Hi.
Yeah, I wanted to talk about the baseball rules they're talking about doing. This is the problem. All of this wouldn't even be needed if they didn't start back in the late 90s. They allowed steroids. They wanted it. It made the fans happy or whatever. Because fans complained that there was not enough scoring, okay? Now, the same idiot fans that said there wasn't enough scoring are saying the games are lasting too long. These dorks won an 11-8 game that lasts 2 hours and 15 minutes. That's not possible unless you start making ridiculous rules like this.
Do you not like the pitch clock, John? The idea of a pitch clock in the minor leagues, there have been some numbers, and I wish I had them in front of me right now, but I know that it has shaved a significant amount of time off of a game. Like, wouldn't you rather, especially with how many games the Astros play on the West Coast, see a pitch clock to speed some of these things up?
I would rather see something like a certain number, or if somebody's taking a certain amount of time. You know, not every pitcher takes forever.
That's true.
I mean, so if there's somebody who's a habitual just goes crazy with it,
line stepper,
then you could say something.
Okay.
But to put pitch clocks in these
guys on second. And
that's the proposal. With runners on base, a pitcher would be required to start the motion of throwing a pitch or making a pickoff throw to avoid the action clock. Right. And to your point, John, I think it would be weird if all of a sudden certain very smart players realize, hey, it's getting towards the end of the pitch clock. This is a guy who takes a long period of time. Maybe I could get a head start on him, make a jump him. I'm with you in that. I feel like this could potentially lead to gaming the system, this specific nuance. I do think, though, that
it's
in the regular
season.
It's
problems they've created. It's problems pitchers? Baseball has created themselves.
Oh, okay. Gotcha. Yeah.
That's a great call, John, though.
But in a nutshell, the whole thing is you can't have a game with 19 runs or even 15, 20 runs with and it only lasts 2 hours. It's impossible.
You're right.
You can't please these people.
And they can't figure out, John, and appreciate the phone call, they can't figure out what they want, baseball. Because baseball, like, they'll juice the ball 1 year, and they'll unjuice the ball, and they never tell anybody if they're juicing it or not. And you see, like, random variances from year to year as far as power numbers, home runs, et cetera. Baseball has been, I think, a victim of a smarter brand of play. I think that you sort of saw it at the start of the 2000s. I remember vividly watching this with the Red Sox, and I'm sure a lot of you guys saw it with the Astros, where teams that had really good lineups with guys like Craig Biggio and Jeff Bagwell and Lance Berkman, these teams all of a sudden are like, you know what? Like, let's just make these pitchers throw more pitches to us. Let's be a little bit less aggressive. Let's work up pitch counts. And then as time has gone on, you have seen guys become extremely choosy and more pitches, less balls in play. Guys trying to hit home runs every single at bat. It's led to a lack of action in the field. And with our ADD ramping up, with all the smartphones that we have more and more power in our hands, that's been a terrible combination for, I think, younger people like myself,
no doubt,
like you, like Sean, as far as enjoying baseball on a night-to-night basis. But I would say this, when the playoffs begin, the sport is perfect. The problem is it just takes you so bleeping long to get to the playoffs.
Yeah, that's true. Introduction of a pitch clock, ban on the defensive shift, and larger bases are the following rule changes per Ken Rosenthal. All right, coming up on Vanessa and Gallant, what would it take for the Texans to win Sunday, plus other week one matchups that we are looking forward to? That's coming up.
ESPN 97.5.